You. All right, Boker Tov, everybody. So Reim Tovim, Erev Tov, wherever you might be. Today, welcome class 90 in our ongoing series on the Siddur. And we're in the middle of course, the first parak of Shema. So last week we finished Vahapta, that we discussed the reciprocity between the love of God and God's love of man, that which is a difficult issue for us in our generation, with all the suffering. But we discussed they really go hand in hand. We're supposed to imitate God, Zeh Livan Behu, means we glorify God, we make nice mitzvot, but it's also a play on words. It's a beautiful idea. Anivahu, Anvehu is Anivahu, me and God. So the same way God is kind and merciful, we have to be kind and merciful. And then we saw the Gemara in Sota, we have to imitate God in his actions, imitate God in his character, God's character of mercy and kindness, not his mercy of anger, because God has that attribute too, 13 attributes. But when the rabbis say to imitate God, it's only the positive attributes. So to speak, anger is generally not good, even though we say, right, God can be a jealous God. Fine, we don't emulate that. And we have to visit the sick and bury the dead, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so hopefully we're going to move today. I'm going to try to understand, and with your help, we have to love God with, I think the way they normally translate it, with all our hearts, with all our soul, and with all our might. So let's try to figure out, we say it twice a day. Some people maybe say it four times a day. Say twice a day in Shachri Nemariv. That's the, we're assuming a biblical obligation. We spoke, of course, a number of weeks ago that there is a view in the Talmud, and that this view makes a lot of sense, actually. We don't accept the view halachically, but that saying Shema is only a rabbinic mitzvah. V'shinanta levanech v'dibarta bam v'shivtecha v'vitecha levtecha v'derech v'shorcha u'kumecha, that you have to say it when you're lying down and getting up. That's talking v'shinanta levanecha. That's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So that's what it means. And the rabbis added rabbinically the mitzvah to say Shema. But that's what it really sounds like. But we mentioned this a little bit. Perhaps we'll mention a little bit more on that pasuk. Is we assume it's a biblical obligation. For some reason, the rabbis had a secondary level of interpretation of that verse. Vishinata Vanecha also includes not just learning, but it includes, of course, Shema. And it's important, we've sort of alluded to time and our time, but it's a very important point that needs repeating a lot, because I think there's so many people don't understand this point, that whenever there's a midrash, and I'm talking about a midrash halacha, there's midrash agada, you know, it's done the stories, analysis, except who was Korach, whatever. And then there's midrash halacha, is deriving halachot from the psukim. So midrash halacha is very often not in keeping with the pshat, but not in keeping with the simple meaning. It doesn't mean the pshat doesn't exist. Ein mikra yotze mi de pshuto is a very important rule, that the text never veers from its standard, its pshat, whatever, simple, plain meaning. And any drasha is always a secondary level of interpretation. The drasha never can replace a pshat in the pasuk. A lot of people, that's a problem. We learn Rashi, we learn all these things, we forget about the pshat, and we just assume the pasuk means what the drasha says. No, the pasuk does not mean what the drasha says. The pasuk means what the pshat says. Then we always have to ask ourselves, why do the rabbis add a secondary level of interpretation, which is not the simple meaning of the text? That this is just an important methodological point about everything. Whenever you come upon a drasha, like ayin tachat ayin, this is a more extreme example, perhaps even a more controversial example. What's the pshat? So that already there's a debate. Some say the pshat is money, but let's take the Rashbam's view. The ayin tachat ayin means an eye for an eye. You poke at somebody's eye, the pshat is. Here, the drasha undid the pshat, but it still doesn't mean the pshat isn't an eye for an eye. So that's a sort of an extreme example, but you always have to ask yourself, why? So in that example, it's pretty simple, is that it would be disgusting of the Torah to say that you poke out somebody's eye, you pay $10,000. That's a terrible thing to say. Even $10 million. An eye is priceless. So the Torah could not put a price on an eye. That's what I heard from my uncle many years ago, that that's how he understood the verse, that Uncle Avi, for those in the family. The Torah had to write ayin tachat ayin. But that would be actually why it didn't mean it, but it had to write it I'm sorry, it, because really, that's the only compensation. But halachically, the compensation is money. Anyways, that's just an important point. But so we have to discuss what, so very often the things we're familiar with are drashot. Because whatever, that's the way, because halacha usually supersedes. I mean, that's, you always have to know this is an area, there's a lot being done in Israel now on this, but, you know, how do we reconcile? Why do they differ? But that's not really our topic. So let's discuss, you have to love God. What does it mean to love God with all your heart? We say it all the time. We say it twice a day. Then some people say it right at the beginning of Birchat HaShachar, Lo Olam Yedei Adam Yirei Shemaim. And then, of course, at Kriyat Shema at night, the first paragraph. So what is the, what do we say, for the, what does it mean to love God with all our hearts? Somebody want to tell me what that means?
Yitzer Tafi Yitzer Ra.
Ah, so that's the drush. I think that's where we're going to get to. You have to love God with your Yetzer HaTov, I think that's a trash, with your positive inclination and your negative inclination. We'll get there. But even, what does that mean? That's very strange. But what do you mean, Bechol? You have to love God with all your heart. But to say my heart is my evil inclination and positive inclination is very nice. But, anybody else? We will come back to that more.
Doesn't it mean to obey?
Maybe that's the way we show love. In other words, we discussed last week, couple of what love means in general. We love God through the study of history, through the study of philosophy, through the study of Torah. That's the mitzvah of Avat Hashem. And connected to Avat Hashem, of course, if you love God, you obey His commandments. What I want to do today is slightly different. Is what does it mean to love God with all our heart? Why does the Torah say I should love God? And all the things I said are true. How do I love God? I study Torah. I study nature, that God created nature. I study history. I love other people who God created, and we live a moral life. We make other people love God. That was our shiur from 2 weeks ago, I believe. We went through that whole thing, making others love God by being a moral, ethical person. So the Torah could have stopped and said, "V'atat Hashem Elokecha." Why did it? What's it adding when it says, "B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol modecha"? So, of course, the
Rabbi.
Yeah.
So I think we should
have two controls.
One at a time. One at a time. Okay, Chaim, quickly.
Our system is controlled by two items: by the heart and by the brain.
Okay.
And basically, I think when you say "B'chol levavcha," all the things that comes from the inclination of the heart should be with that part, we should serve Hashem.
Okay, I still don't know what that means specifically, but okay, yes, we serve God with the heart and the brain.
Love, anything related
love,
to
love comes
being
from the heart. Love doesn't really come from the brain if we're going to do that thing. I mean, you know, love is, you know,
compassion.
Compassion. Okay.
Attitudes that come from the heart. That is really what Hashem is asking from us.
Okay.
How about
one at a time. Okay, I know.
I'm trying to get a word in edgewise. How about it turns out that you shouldn't have some other God in the heart along with?
Love God with all our hearts, that's Shmash, that's Hashem Echad. Have only one God. There was Hashem Echad. I mean, what is the Chol Levav coming? I don't know
I
that
think,
I have a phenomenal.
I think it means you should pine for God.
Ah, you should desire God.
You should pine for Him. The same way you pine for a lover, you pine for God.
Right. So we discussed that in the Rambam a couple weeks ago. Very good. In other words, maybe where the Rambam got that idea that with the same way we fall in love and our spouse, and he says, when you fall in love with your girlfriend and you think about her day and night. So maybe the Rambam is basing that on Mechol Levavcha. It could be. Very good would be. Yeah. What else? Let me throw out another question to help us, perhaps. What mitzvot in the Torah do we have besides loving God? What other mitzvot do we have to do with our heart? So I'm missing some. There are not so many as far as I know.
Rabbi, the heart was not considered a seat of emotion. It was considered the seat of intellect.
Yes, then historically correct. Yeah.
That makes it easier.
I'm not sure if in Jewish tradition it was always like that. I don't know enough to know, but that could be. That's an interesting point. So you want to say here means intellect. B'chol levavcha means with our intellect. Maybe. I don't know.
Yes, and that's why it contrasts with nefesh.
Right.
Oh. That why.
That's Bina talking. I know exactly where Bina learned this. She learned this from where I learned it.
Oh, good. Okay, where'd you learn? Okay, so I don't get it. So how is nefesh the opposite of that?
That's a different question. But traditionally, intellect, the heart was intellect.
Right.
And when we use the heart for emotion, blah, 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 that's all metaphor because physiologically it all goes on in the brain. There's nothing structurally in the heart that allows that to happen.
Okay. But at least I think Rashi interprets it with the heart, with emotion. But yeah, I didn't think that it should be appreciated.
I'm not saying no, but I think it evolved into that.
Okay, so now that's another question. What did the Torah originally mean, and what does it mean now? That's a whole different question. Morris, you have
right.
I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it may be connected to the last paragraph of Shema, where it says, "Lo tetura, pray the lefkim."
Right. That's what I thought of. In other words, well, let's look where else. So, what does "Lo tetura, pray the lefkim" mean?
You shouldn't follow your emotions, I think.
So the way, right, I shouldn't, Rashi says the heart desires, the eye sees and the heart desires. So right. Heart is desire, yearning for something. So it could be learning for love. So that's excellent point. That's what I think. So, so we're not allowed to desire things that we shouldn't desire. What should we desire? We should desire God. We should desire to have a relationship with God. And that's very hard. It's very hard to have a relationship with God, to feel the heart, the way I'm saying this is, I think, a very difficult mitzvah. Like many of the mitzvot that we all take from belief in God, love of God, these are the hardest mitzvot. The mitzvah to keep Shabbos and Kashrut and shake a lulav and build a sukkah and fast on Yom Kippur, those are not hard. I mean, maybe fasting Yom Kippur, the idea behind fasting. But all the mitzvot that relate to actions are relatively easy to do. And avoiding sin is also, sometimes we don't want to, it's hard. It's not really hard, just hard because we don't want to do it. But even mitzvah we want to do, like to be happy, simcha or whatever time, not to be jealous. That's for sure the hardest of the Ten Commandments. The first and the last of the Ten Commandments are the hardest. To truly believe in God, because truly believe in God, we would never sin. How can you sin if you believe God is what? It's not exactly a great question, because we can believe in God. What can we do? Our Yetzer Hara got the better of us. But anything that deals with emotion is very hard. And that's, we've mentioned this before. The rabbis always concretize these mitzvot because emotions are too wild. And Rav Soloveitchik spoke about this all the time. So the halacha always gave, we discussed a few weeks ago what Avat Hashem means, right? To make, be honest in business. That's what the Gemara says, to make others love God, be a nice, moral, ethical person, right? Etc. To study Torah. So that's a manifestation of love of God. But I'm getting now to sort of the, meaning that's a lot harder to understand, a lot harder to fulfill, but full of God. So it could be desire. But the Torah tells us, v'lo tatura achrei levavchem, so it means to love God is to, what should we desire God? Not what our eyes see and everything out there in the world. Okay, very good. But getting back to my mitzvah, what I can only think of two mitzvah, only one biblically. I can only think of one other biblical, maybe two other biblical mitzvot that the Torah connects to the heart. The Torah says do mitzvot. The Torah doesn't say do it with a full heart. That's not what the Torah says. What
are the?
Doesn't say that with your heart. No, love. We discussed last week. Love is three times in the Torah. Re'acha, which we say is really a spouse, because it's not really possible to love somebody else as yourself. Re'acha, you have to love God. You have to love your spouse or other people too. Fine. The pshat is everybody. The drush, the halakhic drush is your spouse. And you have to love a convert, immigrants, and the stranger, because we have to make the extra effort. It's really hard because people, it's very hard to convert, to immigrate. So you have to show extra love to them, right? But what mitzvah? But again, it doesn't say with your heart. It says love the convert because you were or stranger. Love the stranger because you were stranger in Egypt. But what's mitzvah in Torah specifically connected to the heart? I can only think of one. You all know the mitzvah. Let's share our screen and let's see. And it's a positive mitzvah, but it's expressed negatively. Where are we going here? So it's right here. We're going to read it next week. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we're going to read it next week. Parsha Neshamot next week. Dvarim 15. Torah tells us you're going to enter the land. Oh, and every 7 years you're going to have to do Shemitah. And then the Shemitah, here the Torah doesn't talk about agriculture Shemitah, talks about loans, the social aspect of Shemitah, that loans get canceled. Fine. And then it says, you know, there should be have no needy, and the needy can come to your field in Shemitah. But apparently as a reward, God will bless you. If you keep Shemitah, there won't be poor. It gets away, get rid of the poor. So what does the Torah says? But you better keep this Rakim Shemot Yishma. Only if you listen to the mitzvah at Kol HaMitzvah Zot, the entire mitzvah of Shemitah. Shemitah is a hard mitzvah. It's hard to let. I'm not getting to today, and today it's probably only rabbinic. For sure, it's only rabbinic. Maybe it's only a custom. That's why we're more lenient on it. But Shemitah in the Torah is quite important. It's all over the place. If you keep a Kol HaMitzvah, the entire Shemitah, not just the land, but you let loans be canceled. And then I skipped, okay. And then that's the Torah. And then the next thing in the Torah, and that's the context, is the mitzvah of staka. Here it's talking about a Jew. The Gemara says you have to give staka to non-Jews also. Matter of fact, you give staka to idolaters. It's the most amazing halakha. An idolater, you know, idolatry, that's like a big no-no. So the Gemara says, mefarnasi maniye akum. You give money to the, not to idolaters. With Wimani Israel, you have to visit their sick, bury their dead, comfort their mourners. Amazing. Even to idolaters. But the primary mitzvah is to another Jew. Yes, you should give more to other Jews, to our own personal causes. Ani Ircha doesn't just mean the city, means the people you associate with. So, Barzacha, Lo Tamei Tzatlavavcha, do not harden your heart, Lo Tikvotzatitcha. So we see a double aspect by the mitzvah, the emotion, what I call, now you're telling me the intellect, okay? But the emotional aspect, don't harden your heart. That's very nice, and you have to give it your hand. And the Torah's context is Shemitah. The Torah then warns it. We just read about Shemitah. Don't say, I'm not going to give. And it's clear the Torah's talking about a loan, because if you give away money, you don't expect to get it back. We know a loan is a higher form of staka. So the Torah says, don't be very careful, lest you say the Shemitah year is coming, and I'm not going to get my money back. So that, as far as I know, is the only mitzvah in the Torah that is connected to the heart. If somebody has another mitzvah, please let me know. I could be missing it. I tried looking up online. Anything else? But that's the only one. There are two other mitzvot that are connected to the heart. But one is, okay, in general, we're going to say it in the Shema. You have to work the second paragraph of the Shema. We're going to read it this week. This week is the second paragraph of the Shema. So you have Bechol Levavchem, and the Gemara says, Ezu Avodah Shebelev, what is worship of the heart? Zu Tfilah. But again, that's not direct, and only the Rambam takes that on as a pshat level. In other words, the Rambam is really the only one. I mentioned this, it's an amazing thing, really, but the Rambam is pretty much, of all the major medieval authorities, only the Rambam assumes that daily prayer is a biblical obligation. The Ramban assumes prayer, Mikrei Kodesh, on a Yontif, it's a biblical obligation. But not every day. Not every day. Mikrei Kodesh, one of the, you call the people together in prayer. But the fact you have to pray, this is based on what the Gemara says, Ezu Avodah Shebelev, what's worship of the heart, Zu Tfilah. Most medieval authorities assume that's a drasha. It's an asmachta, what we call. In other words, it's a way to pin a rabbinic idea on a verse. It's a little bit of a memory device. It's a little bit a memory, but it's also to sort of make it more important. In other words, the rabbinic law, it's a rabbinic law, but it's connected to what it says in the Torah. That's how most people understand it. But still, Tfilah is with our heart. So Shema and Tfilah. And how do we do it with the heart? Silently, focused. I don't know. What does it mean to daven? It means that God takes care of all our needs. So what does it mean to love God with all our hearts? Perhaps if you want to associate it with Tfilah, Avodah Shebelev, it's the recognition that God controls everything. That's true love. I love so. I shouldn't love him because he controls everything, but I love, there's a certain understanding. But that's, another mitzvah that's done with the heart. And also we know tefillah is really hard. The Rav Soloveitchik has one of his famous distinctions. If you read, we're coming to Elul soon. So I'll do a show of hands. You don't have to, but whatever. I'm just curious. Tova, you remember we learned this in Binghamton in 1976? Allah Tshuva, 1979. How many people have read Allah Tshuva? If you've read Allah Tshuva, I'm just curious if people have read Allah Tshuva, anybody, of the Rav Soloveitchik, Pinchas Peli's adaptation of the Rav's famous drushes. The Rav gave two very famous public drushes. I was never at any of them. I'm too young. Whatever can I say? I mean, in theory, I'm not too young, but by the time I got to YU, I never went as a teenager. I guess I could have gone as my bar mitzvah, but he gave a drusha on Gimel Shvat, the yahrzeit of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. And when I say he gave a drush, I mean, he spoke for 4 hours or 5 hours, and there'd be 2,000 people there. And the Rav would stop in the middle and say, should I continue? And 2,000 people would yell, yes. And people didn't go to the washroom for 4 hours. Talk to anybody who went to the Rav, who was a spellbinding speaker, a master orator. English was like his sixth language, you know, and he was an amazing, he would give halacha, agada, and then the other famous one is during a Aseret Yemei Tshuva. He would give a Tshuva drusha based on the Rambam, and Pinchas Peli, I don't know if you've heard of Pinchas Peli, I'm sure many, he was a professor at Be'er Sheva University, I believe, but when he came to YU for, I don't know, he was doing work in the state, and then somehow we became close to Rav Soloveitchik, interestingly enough, and he did eight of the drushas. They were given in Yiddish. He wrote them out in Hebrew, and then it's been published in English, Al HaTshuva. So there the Rambam and the Rav Soloveitchik, we're going to get there in one moment, because this is the other mitzvah that perhaps is connected to the heart, the mitzvah of tshuva, that Rav Soloveitchik explains that the Rambam getting into the whole problem in the Rambam, but basically Rav Soloveitchik develops the idea of the difference between a maaseh mitzvah and a kiyuma mitzvah, between an action, the formal action of the mitzvah, and the fulfillment of the mitzvah. And while usually they're the same, how do I fulfill the mitzvah of lulav? I pick up a lulav, and that's, I'm mekayim the mitzvah, I fulfill the mitzvah, and the action is to pick up the lulav. But Rav Soloveitchik developed that in some of really the most important mitzvot in Judaism. There's a split. The action, it's kind of what we were discussing before, the emotion, the concretizing. The real mitzvah is not what you do. The real mitzvah is in the heart. But in order to motivate the heart, to get CPR, to get the heart really working as it should, you have to do certain things. So the Rav's, where he develops this theme, and that's why it's in the Tshuva Drasha, I highly recommend the book, Al HaTshuva. It's really phenomenal. It's phenomenal. It's in Hebrew and English, and it's for your Elul reading and Yontif. It's not so long. It's really beautiful. But anyway, Rav Soloveitchik said that the mitzvah, how do you do tshuva? So we come, let's take the one easy part of tshuva, Yom Kippur, day of tshuva. So what do? We fast, we daven. There's a three-step process. We're sorry for what we did. I don't know that we really are, but in theory, then we admit our sin, vidui. You have to confess. It's very hard for people to admit what they did is wrong. And then you have to say, I'm not going to repeat it in the future. You have to try. That's how you do tshuva. That's not how you do tshuva. That's not tshuva. That's the mechanics of tshuva. But the mitzvah of tshuva is not to do the mechanics. The mitzvah of tshuva is to be a different person, to be a changed person, to totally change. Not that I say I'm sorry, I bang my heart, I move on. You need the mechanics. The mechanics, you know, you need to do the nitty gritty. If you just rely, I have a good heart, you know, Jews, I have a good heart, I don't have to keep all the mitzvot. Doesn't work. You get a heart attack. Like, you can't live back that way. Judaism demands action. But the mitzvah is not to do vidui, not to confess. And the Rav Soloveitchik then develops the mitzvah is not to say words. This is perhaps the hardest example. We daven every day, whatever. I don't know that I daven every day. I know I say the words of the Siddur every day. And sometimes I skip some of them. I come late to shul, so I, you know, whatever. But I say the words of the Siddur every day. I don't know that I daven every day. Davening is avodah shebelev. Davening is a feeling. That's the way the Rav describes it. It's a connection to God. The halacha wanted us to put that in a way that says just to mumble words. I don't want to say it's meaningless. That would be too harsh for me, upon me and lots of you. I don't want to say it's meaningless, I'd say it's not so meaningful. The mitzvah of tefillah is not to daven. The mas, that's what the Rav termed it, ma'aseh ha-mitzvah and kiyum ha-mitzvah. There's the action and then the fulfillment. So the Rav said you have that by tshuva, you have it by tefillah, you have it by kriyat shema. As what's the mitzvah of kriyat shema? That's what we're talking about now. The mitzvah of kriyat shema is kabbalah romachut shemayim, to accept the yoke of heaven. What are the mechanics? To say shema twice a day. But the mitzvah, that's not the mitzvah. That's the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah. The kiyum, fulfillment of the mitzvah, is kabbalah romachut shemayim. Simcha and yontiv. The mitzvah is not to eat meat and drink wine and, you know, have party. The mitzvah is to be happy. That's the mitzvah. Avelus. The mitzvah is not to grow a beard and to sit on a low stool and to rip your clothes. That's the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah. But the kiyum ha-mitzvah is this feeling. So that's b'chol levavcha. To love God with all our heart. A heart is not an action. Heart is a feeling. And you have to love God. That's much harder. It's very, very easy, but it's much easier to do things to demonstrate, that you love even. But the mitzvah b'chol levavcha means you have to yearn for God, search for God, not close your heart. But I just find it fascinating that the only mitzvah in the Torah directly that talks about our heart is by tzedakah. Because again, everything about God is a message for man. And what's the most important positive mitzvah in the Torah? There are 248 mitzvot, whatever. I started to read Dov Friedberg's book on this mass, 613 mitzvot, fascinating book, but not through it yet. Anyways, 248 mitzvot. What's the most important of 248? I think. What does the Rambam say? I should maybe if I come afterwards, I'll show it to you. Where it's the most important mitzvah maybe, you know what? I'll show it to you right now. Just, I hope you'll give me half a minute. I hope you'll forgive me because I didn't prepare it in advance. Let's go here. Safaria. Okay. Let's go to. No, I don't want Tanakh. What just happened here? I want Halacha, and I want Mishnah Torah, and I want Sefer Zmani, I want Sefer Zraim, and I want Gifts to the Poor, and I want the 10th chapter. Okay. Chayvim ano lizer b'mitzvat tzedakah yoter mikol mitzvat aseh. One has to be careful with the mitzvah of tzedakah more than any other one. The one that has to be most careful, not necessarily the exact same as most important, but it's pretty important. The one you have to be most careful about, it's tzedakah. Mikol mitzvot aseh, shat tzedakah siman l'tzadik zera v'rambino. You want to be Jewish? How do we know you're Jewish if you give tzedakah? Because that's what Avram did. Shenemar ki yadati, right? Why did God choose Abraham to be the founder of the Jewish people? Because I know. God said he's going to teach his children. Lasot tzedakah. It's a pasuk in Vayera. I'm going to teach them right after Sodom there. When God says, I'm going to tell them about Sodom, how can I hide from Sodom? Because Avram is going to be this great guy. He's going to be the founder of this great nation because he's going to teach his kids tzedakah. Ben kisei Yisrael mikonem v'dad amed omer ad eli b'tzedakah. Whoa, this is pretty powerful language. The Jewish people, the throne of Israel will not be established. Okay. V'dad amed, and the true religion can only stand if you give tzedakah. If we don't give tzedakah, then that's a falsification of Judaism. Ben Yisrael nigalim el b'tzedakah. We read this last week before Tisha B'Av. The Jewish people are only redeemed through tzedakah. Tziyom mishativ tevishavah b'tzedakah. So it's pretty logical. If the most important mitzvah, in a sense, is to love God, right? Every mitzvah relating to God has a corollary to man, because, you know, we're created in man's image, so we're like God. We have to treat others like God. So if there's a mitzvah to God, to love God, so the mitzvah to love man is through tzedakah. But again, the ideal, you have to love other people, but the Torah concretizes that mitzvah through the heart, I'm saying. In other words, the mitzvah, it's with our, I don't know, this is my own interpretation. Maybe you think it's too, I'm pushing things that aren't there, but I think it is significant that the only mitzvah that directly connects our heart, the mitzvah is, you know, tzedakah. The rabbis connect tefillah, and there's a third thing. And let's just do quickly the third mitzvah. Well, that's the question. Is it a third mitzvah, or is it a general category, which, again, greatly expands what we've just said. If so, the Torah, we're going to read this, You either we read it the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah, or if there's an extra Shabbos this year, there's no extra Shabbos because the Yamim Tovim are in Shabbos. So we're going to read it Nitzavim Vayelech, the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. Where are we here? Parsha Nitzavim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ki mitzvah zod asher nafim mitzvah kamayom lo nifleiti mivchat. This mitzvah that I command you today is not so wonderful. It's not so wondrous or nifle. Apella means something you don't understand. The lo rechokat's not he. It's not far. It's a well-known pasuk. Lo b'shamayim, it's not in the heavens. Today, we can go on a rocket ship to Shemayim, but in the time of the Torah, they couldn't say it. Now it has a whole new meaning, this first time. Who's going to go to the heaven to get it? But okay. Velo me'aver liyam, it's not across the sea. Today, it's also much quicker. You go across the sea in a few hours on a plane. Me'aver lano te'aver yibikachenu, ki karov. It's close. Beficha ubilvavcha lasoto. So here the Torah says you have to do this mitzvah with your mouth and with your heart. Beficha ubilvavcha lasoto. The problem is, what is this mitzvah? Ki mitzvah zor, asher nafi. Well, what mitzvah are we talking about? Well, let's go to the beginning of the parsha. So yam kavoya elacha. So it's talking b'shafta d'shamalkecha. So that's how the Ramban says. It's talking about the mitzvah of tshuva. We read this, these, you know, psukim. We read this for, tefillah l'shlom ha'medina. No, in the end of the conversation, we read this every Shabbos when we say the prayer for the state of Israel. But it's, so the Rambam says that the mitzvah, the Ramban says, here mitzvah zot, that's the mitzvah of tshuva. And that's the mitzvah they have to do with all your heart. So again, that fits into very much what we're talking about. The things that our heart, there's some action, but the real mitzvah is not the action. It's the feeling coming close to it, really feeling it. Now, kia mitzvah zot, interesting. Rashi, I think it's Rashi, but others say kia mitzvah zot is the entire Torah. That's puts a whole, everything I've been saying now, you just expand to everything. But again, there's a difference between saying a general thing and then a specific thing. But some interpret in the context, it really is talking about tshuva. This is Moshe Rabbeinu, the last speech, he's about to die. Parsha Nitzavim, you're stand, tem Nitzavim, ayom kolchem, you're all here. You know, I'm making a covenant with you. I want you to keep the mitzvot. So obviously it's talking about all the mitzvot. But there, right before, it's talking about returning to God, so the mitzvah of tshuva. But again, it's the idea of the heart. So, the heart is really important, doing mitzvah with the heart, but the Torah specifies it by loving God, by tzedakah, perhaps by tefillah, perhaps on tshuva, but indirectly, not in a direct way. Okay, the other thing that can't be misled by our hearts. Okay, this is all, I think, the pshat. Now let's get to what Morris said at the beginning. What does the Talmud say? So let's go what it says in the Mishnah. In Mishnah Brachot.
Just like a minute, can I say something?
Of course.
When we read it, Hayom, it's right. Today. Right. So it's not right. Like he said then, but it's today.
Right. Every day the Torah should be like new. That's how the rabbis always interpret it. But it doesn't mean that it's the meaning is the same every day. I think it actually means the exact opposite. When the Torah says, I want you to keep this mitzvah today, I think what the Torah is often telling us, you have to keep the mitzvah today, even though things are very different. The mitzvah means something very, very different. That's all we have to develop. We've spoken a little about that in the past, but mitzvah take on new meaning. And, you know, it's the same mitzvah, but, you know, it means every person has to, you know, for different people in different places, the mitzvahs are very different. But, and when the Torah says, they should be like new, because we don't like, we're bored. Things are boring, right? New Coke. I don't know that didn't work so well, but we like new things. So that's why the Torah says Torah should be fresh and new. It just doesn't, it's not just attitudinally. Of course it is attitudinally, but I think it also means you have to refresh Torah. Torah has to live in the context of, you know, the time that we are living in, and has to relate to our times. So it's got to be new. It has new applications, the same principles, new applications. So that's, I think, the rabbis also mean that not just we should do the same thing with new energy, we should infuse the Torah with new meaning. And that's what, that's the Rashbam's comment. I think I mentioned last week where the Rush, or 2 weeks ago, where the Rashbam is critical of Rashi. I know critical of Rashi. He says, I learned with my grandfather, the Rashbam. I learned with my grandfather, the Rashi. You know, Rashi didn't write introductions. That was a Sephardic idea. Yes. All Sephardic rabbis wrote introductions. No Ashkenazi. No Rashi, Balei Torah. They don't write introductions to the work. The only hint is in, I think, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chet, in Bereshit, where Rashi quotes, I forget the Pasuk now, I should know the Pasuk in Gan Eden there. And Rashi says that this is the Medrash, but you should know, Ani lo bati ela feresh the Pshuto shel Mikra. I only came to explain Pshat. I'm not for Medrash. And every once in a while, Rashi will say, this is beautifully explained in the Medrash, and he won't explain it. So that's Nechama Leibowitz claimed that Rashi kept to this, that every time Rashi quotes a Midrash, it's a pshat, when this is not for now, but just to sort of make you aware. Nechama Leibowitz, that was a big thing of hers, and she was the world's expert in many ways on Rashi, that the claim that whenever Rashi quotes Midrashim only as pshat, the majority of people disagree with her. And say no, Rashi, you know, he said he's going to do pshat, you know, but he liked the trash. It was nice. So he added in, and it's not really the pshat. But the Rashbam obviously believed this too, that Rashi wasn't just doing pshat. So he writes in Parsha Vayeshev, we mentioned this, that I told my grandfather, you know, you got to, this is no good. Like you're writing all the pshat. And my grandfather said to me, you're right. If I had time, I would rewrite my entire commentary. Lefi ha-pshatot ha-mitchatshot b'chol yom. According to the pshat that mitchatshot b'chol yom, that renews itself every day. Now, there have been a lot of literature written on that line. I'll get to you 1 second. A lot of literature on that line, but what's the line? Every day there's a new pshat, a new simple meaning of the verse. That's wild. A new drush, I understand, but a new pshat, wow. No, it means the way we read the psukim. I mean, typically, I do think I don't think it's such a big deal, but when the Torah says who's going to go to the heavens to take it, so we have to think, what does that mean? Get in the airplane and go into the heavens. I don't know. I don't know. It's just interesting. Yeah, but who wanted to say something? Susan, was that you? Wanted to say
yes,
something?
Yes, you asked about when Rashi said that I only want to do that. That was about the plastic by Gan Eden. When it said, Ruach Hashem coming in the Gan, that you could hear God coming in the Gan Kochal, Ruach Hayom, that how could it be that God, how could you hear God coming? So that was what Rashi says that I have to explain.
Thank you for that. I didn't remember the exact verse, but yes, I know it's the beginning of Bereshit there. So whatever it means. But now, so that's, so there are new pshatim every day. But I'm it's not my field really, but I know, and Mordechai Breuer has a whole article about that, about what does that mean? Pshatot hamid katshot b'chol yom. What does pshat mean? Nobody can give you a simple meaning, plain meaning. It's for sure not literal. By the way, how do you say literal meaning in rabbinic
literature?
Literal
meaning.
Mashma, right. Mashma'o. Rashi says, once in a while, pshutoka mashma'o. When Rashi uses pshutoka, in other words, the pshat is the literal translation, meaning most of the time the pshat is not the literal translation. That's not the pshat. That's the literal translation. And every once in a while, the literal translation is the drush. That's my favorite is, right? How do you know God prays? That's the pasuk in Yeshua. We read it on every fast day, except Yom Kippur. I will rejoice in the whole, I'll bring it to my holy mountain, and rejoice bebeit tfilati, my house of prayer. So what's the pshat? That's where the house is, that all nations can come to the world to pray. That's everybody can come. The temple is the house of prayer. That's the pshat. The drush is Beit Tfilati, God prays. My house of prayer, God is praying. That's not the pshat. That's a drush. But it's very funny. The drush is the literal translation of the verse. The literal translation, God doesn't pray. It's ridiculous, right? So sometimes the literal translation is the drush. But anyways, there is a difference. But now let's get to the drasha that Morris said at the beginning, and we'll try to discuss that. I don't know. And see what B'chol Levavcha means, Alpi Drush. So let's share my screen again. Where am I here? Okay, let's go. So this is the last Mishnah in Masechet Brachot. It's a long Mishnah. It's a beautiful Mishnah. I mean, it's whatever. It's a powerful Mishnah. This is, remember, Mishnah Brachot begins with Me Eimatai Korein Tishma B'Arvit. When do you say Shema at night? It's interesting. I was just listening. Rabbi Rekepet, I heard this from. So he was quoting a Hasidic Rebbe. Me'ematai korein tashma barbit. What does me'ematai korein tashma barbit mean? What's the pshat? What time do you say Shema? Well, what's the earliest time to say Shema? That's how the Mishnah begins. So he quoted in the Hasidic world, I don't know who said this, I was smiling. It's like, it's cute. It's like, may Eimatai, Eima means fear, fear, awe. May Eimatai Karim Shema. You have the Shema with fear and trembling. May Eimatai Karim Shema. From the feeling of Eima and Yirah, that's how you say Shema. Okay, that's for sure not the Pshat at all. I'm not even sure it's the drush. It's a vort. I don't know. But I thought it's a beautiful, in many ways, a very beautiful idea. Anyways, so we begin with Kriyat Shema, and then we're going to end with Kriyat Shema. In the middle, we go through Tevilah and Birchan HaMazon. The three main themes of Masechet Brachot are Kriyat Shema, Tevilah, Shmona Esrei, Birchan HaMazon, and then the ninth chapter, the ninth and final chapter, is Brachot in general. When you see miracles, when you inherit a lot of money, you see Niagara Falls, earthquakes, all the brachot you have to make for different occasions. So here, the Mishnah, famous idea, Chayav Adam Levarech Al Ra Kashem Shu Mevarech Al HaTovah. A person has to bless even when bad things happen. They come from God. We don't like it. We don't know it. Chayav Adam Levarech, but it's still obligated. Shenemar, V'hafta Shem Akecha B'chol Levacha B'chol Nafshecha B'chol Modecha. You have to love God with all your heart, with all your soul. Right? From what part of the verse tells us that we have to love God, we have to bless God even for bad things? They quote a pasuk that the Mishnah makes a statement, you have to bless God even when things are not good. And then they quote a verse to back that up, to prove it. They quote the verse, where in the world does that verse tell us you have to bless God when things are bad? Okay, we'll leave that for now. It's not b'chol levavcha. So the mission is going to say b'chol levavcha b'shnei yitzarecha, b'yetzer hatov u'b'yetzer hara. With yetzer hatov, yetzer ra. We'll see if it's b'chol na, with your inclination for good and your inclination. What's the Gemara saying? Levavcha. It doesn't say b'chol lev. It says levav. I don't know Hebrew well enough. I guess levavcha is plural, so it has to be levavcha. Even though to me it sounds a little singular, levavot, but which is interesting. I don't exactly know how they make the drasha. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't levavka also singular? Levavkem would be in plural. Nonetheless, the Gemara has...
Because of the two bets. Because two bets could
right.
be levka.
Okay, I hear that.
That's why they said it.
I don't know, but I guess that's why it's a drasha, because they have to say b'chol levavcha. In other words, it's talking to you. It's personalized. It's not a generic. You have to love God. B'chol levavcha.
Levcha. Right. Put it that way.
Anyway, levcha, which is your heart, which means one, not two. But
because
anyways,
they end at the bet, that's where you get the drash.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good. Now, levcha. How do you love God with our yetzer hara? I get how we love God with our yetzer hatov. How do you love God with your Yetzer Hara? What do you mean to love God with your Yetzer Hara? Stump you, eh? Okay, so I'll ask another question. I ask questions because I want to get the answers. I want to hear your answers. I learn the most from my students. Okay, I'll throw in another question, related question. We're still have Tu B'Av. I don't want to talk about Tshuva too much, and they want to enjoy the rest of the summer. You know, you got to do things so you have what to do tshuva for, right? No, only in Elul you do tshuva. Okay, that's meant as a joke. I hope you understand. But this is, you know, relax after Tisha. It's like you know what the Medrash says on Sukkos. It's so powerful. The rabbis, they're so realistic. That's why I love them. They're so like down to earth. It says ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. You should take on the first day, Priyat Sadar, Kapot Marin, that's the Lulav and Etrog. What do you mean, the Yom HaRishon? So it means the Pshat is the Yom HaRishon of Sukkot, right? The first day of Sukkot. Biblically, you only have to take the Lulav the first day of Sukkot. Only rabbinically, we take it 7 days, because in the temple, they took it 7 days. But the rabbis, what do you mean the first day? So the rabbis say it's the 15th day. I say the first day, Yom Rishon La'avonot. It's the first day of the year people sin. Rosh Hashanah, who's going to, the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we're on our best behavior. We don't even eat parakim, which is a strange chumrah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes. We only have Jewish baked bread. Okay. Everybody's saying slichas and they're in shul day and night and they're fasting and Aseret Yemei Tshuva, you know, good behavior. I'm learning the Rambam and I'm reading Allah Tshuva. I don't sin. Yom Kippur, you don't sin. Yom Kippur to sukkahs. Oh my God, sukkahs. I got to build a sukkah. Who we're having? Lulav Metro, the kids are coming. You have no time. The first night of Sukkot arrives, sitting in the Sukkah, lots of time to talk Lashon Hara. Let's get back. Yom Kippur, I got a whole year to do tshuva. So, the rabbis say, Yom HaRishon LaAvonot, it's such a powerful idea that Sukkot is the first day of sinning of the year. Yeah, we're normal. What can we do? So anyways, between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Chodesh Elul, we're a little relaxed. The summer, we're in summer mode. Okay, but later. We say, this is all to answer the question to another. We say in Al-Chet, Al-Chet shechatanu lefanecha b'yetzer ha-tov, b'yetzer, isn't that one of the Al-Chets? Al-Chet shechatanu lefanecha b'yetzer ha. Right, look it up. I don't have a machzor in front of me, but we say the sin that we did for the yetzer ha-tov. So my question is, how do you worship God with the yetzer ha-ra, and how do you sin with the yetzer ha-tov? I think they're the same idea. That's why I'm raising the question. Morris, what do you want to say?
There's a Gemara, dealing with Avodah Zarah, where it talked about Hashem got rid of the Yetzer
for idolatry.
Yeah. That all procreation all stopped because people need that little bit of Yetzer Hara to do things, to love your wife and to.
Right, exactly. So that's a Midrash. Without the Yetzer Hara, nobody would have kids. Nobody would want the business. The Yetzer Hara to make money, it's good. The Yetzer Hara to make money can kill you, can destroy you. And that's B'chomo Decha. We'll get there. But the Yetzer Hara, we need a Yetzer Hara to make money. And we need a Yetzer Hara. The sexual drive is very important. Yeah, often it's misused. But the rabbis, again, the realistic sense that they totally understood without the Yetzer Hara. What Morris is referring to, the Gemara, right, that they got rid of the Avodah Zarah, the desire for idolatry. And then they said, okay, and it worked. They said, let's get rid of the desire for sexuality. That didn't work because no eggs were laid. Nobody had kids. That was the end of the world. So they said, okay, God, bring it back. So God brought it back with one twist. What was the one twist? Anybody remember? The one twist was that the incest. It's very rare. Brothers don't have sexual yearnings for their sisters. That's very unusual. And incest is not common. Happens, unfortunately, but it's not so common. So that the Yetzer Hara was taken away. But we need the Yetzer Hara. Absolutely, we need the Yetzer Hara. Of course, when God took away the Yetzer Hara for idolatry, as mentioned, He took away what came with it is the desire to service God. In other words, you can't have the desire for idolatry. That hurt our desire to serve God. In other words, we don't have desire for God so much anymore. That's the problem. That's why the yearning for avodas are basically, and this is, I think, the whole point, because b'shnei yitzarecha, with the yetzer tov yetzer, every action in everything in this world is neutral. It's all in how you use it. And everything can be used for good and everything can be used for evil. And the same way whatever is true in the physical world is true in the spiritual world. So Newton's third law, a motion for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. For every potential for good, there's an opposite and equal potential for evil. And for every potential for evil, there's an opposite and equal potential for good. And if you don't have potential for good, you can't have potential for evil. If you don't have potential for evil, no potential for good. Whether I eat Rice Krispies or Cheerios doesn't really matter. But how I use nuclear energy, either we're going to destroy the world in a nuclear war, or we're going to save the world from global warming with nuclear energy. The stakes are really high. So, and that's, so the Yetzer, you can't have a Yetzer HaTov without a Yetzer Hara. Or if there's no Yetzer, it's meaningless. In other words, so the fact that Jews today don't worship idols really is not a big deal because God took away that Yetzer Hara from us. Now, it's hard. It became harder to worship God. So that's the challenge we have. So to worship God with the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara means you need the Yetzer Hara. Without a Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov is totally meaningless. In other words, the way I'm explaining it now, Yetzer Hara is just There's one Yetzer. There's A and B. It's flip sides of the same coin. Can't have one without the other. You can't. It's meaningless. That's the angels. The angels don't have a Yetzer Hara, but we're not angels. So we need free choice. Without free choice, if you force somebody to do mitzvot, it's meaningless. Isn't that what the Amish do? They give people a week off, right? Right? Okay. That's, and they can choose. The other idea is to channel the Yetzer Hara. That's what we said first. We channel jealousy. So jealousy, we assume, is not a good trait, but I said every trait is in how you use it. But some lean negative, lean positive. Yes. So hakina hataiva vahakava motzimet abdamin olam. Jealousy, lust, and desire for honor remove a person from this world. They'll kill you, eat you alive. So, but what do the rabbis say? Kinot sofrim tarbe chokhmah, the jealousy of sages. I'm jealous of the Nobel Prize winner. And so I want to win the Nobel Prize. I want the honor. I want to go to Norway and have my my suit checked for shatnez like Professor Alman did. And they found like shatnez when he was about to get the Nobel Prize and they made him a new suit. I want to make a kiddush. I want to be famous. So it's not such noble ideas. Oh, it's okay. Kina sofrim tarbe chokhmah. The jealousy of sages will increase wisdom. Somebody once told me, it's got to be a really bad joke. I don't know. I don't want to mention his name even. I don't think most people would know him. He was a professor once at Bar-Ilan University. And then he ran for the Knesset. Something. So he mentioned to me that he left academia to go into politics. He couldn't take the politics in academia. So he went to the Israeli Knesset. So I hope that's a joke, as a bad joke, whatever. But everybody knows, what goes on sometimes in academia. There is a lot of, I want the honor, somebody gets his assistant to write the paper that takes the credit. People who know this stuff. So part of that is bad, but part of it can be very good because you want to get this honor. So you're going to work hard. And of course, what the rabbis really, I'm putting it in science, Nobel Prize, whatever. But of course, what the rabbis meant is in studying Torah. Yeah, there is something that, today it's whatever, it's, but a rabbi, a Talmid Chacham, should be wealthy. The Gemara says that not wealthy like we consider why? In other words, it's when you see someone, why should I go into chinuch? You can't afford a house if you become a mechanic. So good, that's correct, and therefore good people don't go into chinuch, and therefore our educational system is not so good. We can't get good teachers. Every school is looking for teachers. They don't have enough because they don't pay enough. I don't even know that I blame them. I don't think it's the school's fault. They don't have the money. It's impossible. But there's something, whatever. You want people to, keynote speech, jealousy is needed. People want to live. They want a nice house. The Gemara says, people like a nice house. That's okay. You should have that. Baruch Hashem. This pat b'melech tocha, that's not an ideal. It means even if sometimes you have to suffer and have bread and water, Torah is so valuable, you do it. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was very wealthy. Many great, matter of fact, historically, we know almost all great rabbis were wealthy. That's the reason they could become great rabbis. Without wealth, you couldn't become. Today, we have a universal kolo system. But used to be only the cream of the crop could learn, but not just the cream of the crop intellectually, that was true, the cream of the crop economically, because you couldn't afford it. What community could afford more than half a person in a kolo? You had a big, four people, two people, who could afford it? So only the wealthy. It's well known. Throughout history, most of the great rabbis came from very wealthy families, because otherwise they couldn't afford it. I've often mentioned the Maharsha, on the back of every Gemara, Rav Shlomo Eidels. So Eidels, this is for all the modern people. Eidels was his wife's name. That wasn't his name. When they got married, he took his wife. Why did he take his wife's name? Because he married a wealthy girl and his mother, I think the father was no longer living. The mother-in-law had a lot of money. And she says, Mr. Marsha, Mr. Morenu, Rav Shlomo Eidels, I want you to sit and learn. I want you to write a commentary on Talmud and I will pay. They didn't go to the community to pay, private people. I'll pay for you to learn. And he said, and became the Marsha because of his mother-in-law. So he took her name. He said, I have to give her honor. What's my name? I'm a nobody. So all my wife's family, I all my honor. So it's a beautiful idea. But so only the wealthy could learn. So to be jealous, again, the rabbis probably mean it's jealous in terms of, chidushin, but it also means it's okay to be a little bit jealous of the nice life you had. And the Gemara says that the Kohen Gadol had to be wealthy, etc. So there is a notion of using something for proper purposes. I mean, even anger, which is the one trait, anger and humility are the two traits the Rambam says we don't go by the golden mean. And, you know, Rambam says you shouldn't be too miserly. That's what I'm saying. You shouldn't be too much money, but you shouldn't extol poverty. That's not good either. You know, middle, normal. You should be whatever normal. So the Rambam says anger is an exception. You should be very, very, never get angry. But nonetheless, even anger can be channeled for something good. We can't live up to that. People have tempers, so whatever. People, not everybody, lots of people have big egos. Some people have bigger egos than others. So they can't follow the Rambam like Moshe, Hevi Shval Ruach, to be very unhumble. So they have to use that for a good purpose. So that's what the Gemara says. If you have a temper, you like to... You want to go boxing, so become a shochet. Gemara says right there, use whatever negative traits. So that's, I think, the other way that the Yetzer Hara, it's not just it's really one and the same, and without one you can't have the other. It's true, but also we can use negative things for a positive way. You know, or if you want to put it in a more modern, on a political terms, who was the one? Oh, they were quoting last week. Who was the one who said never let a good crisis go to waste? You know, we can always grow from our challenges and stuff, but the answer are always something positive. How do we sin with our Yetzer HaTov? Let's see, it's late already. How do we sin with our Yetzer HaTov? That's we're too nice to people. I think that's the language in Yom Kippur. Sometimes, you know, that's the expression when you're going to be kind to the evil, you'll be evil to the kind. That's what the rabbis say. Sometimes it's hard to know. You should always, sometimes we can be too nice to people. And that's, I think it's Rav Kook who said, I heard the name of Rav Kook, that's why Avram had a Yishmael. That's a wild idea. Because Avram was the Midah of Chesed Staka, we saw. God chose Avram because of Staka, but Avram you can have too much chesed. I mean, you can have too much kindness. So you have too much, you sort of end up with a Yishmael, you end up with a wild kid who can do whatever they want. No, that's, I heard the name of Rav Kook. And, so the Yetzer HaTov can sometimes go too far. We can do mitzvot with the Yetzer Hara, but we can also do Averot with the Yetzer HaTov. And I'll just end before we do. But if you're going to make a mistake, it's always better to make a mistake like with the Yetzer HaTov and not the Yetzer Hara. No, it's not exactly related, but I always like to tell the story. I remember when I was, at YU. So one of the stories they told, there's a big machloket once, and they came a shochet, the fire, this and that, and he wasn't, you know, the meat wasn't too glut, who knows what. People didn't trust the kashrut. And they came to Rav Chaim of Valazhin, the Rosh Yeshiva, the founder of the Valazhin Yeshiva, the top student of the Vilna Gaon. This is how I told the story, how I heard the story. And they came to him and they said, what's your opinion? He said, I'm not getting involved. What do you mean you're not getting involved? It's like, is the meat kosher or trey? He said, listen, that the Shaila they're asking, it's a rabbinic law, this law, that is a rabbinic law. Machloket, that's an Isur Doraita. To get involved in Machloket, that's a biblical law. I'm going to avoid that. So I'll violate the rabbinic law of non-kosher food. But that, they always say, they use it by, in the name of a lot of people, they have a Shaila, and they tell the woman comes with the chicken, very poor, and the rabbi always finds a way to say it's kosher 99% of the time. And sometimes it's very questionable, very, very questionable whether it's kosher. And they'll say, no, you know what? When I come to heaven, and let's say I'm wrong. Let's say it's straight. So I'll have an argument with God. I'll explain to God, God, I try. What can I do? Okay, so God will get a little upset. But let's say it's kosher and I say it's straight. And this old woman in Shemayim is going to be talking, there's no answer I can have for her. So it's always, if you're not sure, it's okay. If we all do sins with the Yetzer HaTov, it's not so bad, even though we say Al Chet. But that's Yetzer. Okay, so I see we're not going to get to B'chol Nafshecha. Maybe that's where we have to love. Remember, this comment is on the halacha that you have to bless God for negative things. because it says, and then it sort of goes on a tangent. But that has nothing to do with what they just said. Okay, it's 10:30. Let's do a quick review. We're trying to discuss what it means to love. That's the whole shiur today. What does it mean to love God with all our heart? So we discussed the notion. Let's do the pshat. We distinguish between pshat and the drash. Heart, whether it correct originally mean in intellect, which would be true, although we associate them more with Talmud Torah. I think the way rabbinic interpretation has come down with us, the heart is much more from the emotional side. It's desire, lo tatura. If we have a prohibition not to go after lo tatura for the bavkam, so the opposite is to love God with heart, that yearning for God, to be close, emotion, love, sincerity. Those are all the things we associate today when you have a good heart. And we said, fascinatingly, it's the only positive, the only mitzvah in the Torah that directly mentions the heart is the mitzvah of tzedakah. Don't harden your heart. And we said, because the mitzvah of tzedakah is the primary mitzvah. The Rambam says you have to be more careful in tzedakah than any other positive mitzvah, because that's why God chose Abraham. I mean, so there's that sort of parallel. Tfilah is avodah shebalev, but that's, the Rambam accepts that biblically, but again, it doesn't say so directly. That's an interpretation, fine. But interpretation means, it doesn't mean it's in the text, even if that's the meaning of the text. And it also, but others say it rabbinically, and then we saw the mitzvah of tshuva. Kim mitzvah zot, you have to do this mitzvah, b'ficha b'vavcha, with your heart and with your mouth. So it could be referring to the whole Torah generically, you know, yes, there's something, of course, we should have desire and do the Torah with our heart, but specifically tshuva. And then we had the whole discussion that the distinction the Rav Soloveitchik famously made, or Ala Tshuva, which again, if what you get out of the shiur is you're going to read Ala Tshuva for Yontif, you can forget everything I say. It would be very worthwhile to have given the shiur. The difference between a Masa HaMitzvah and a Kiyum HaMitzvah, the action, the mechanics of the mitzvah, we bang our heart and we fast, and the real action to change yourself, right? To be joyful and Yontif. Not to eat meat and to drink wine. To daven is not to say words. To daven is not to say words. To daven is avodah shebalev. To love God even is not the actions. That's true, but it should be a feeling. And that makes it very, very, very difficult. And then we discussed, how can you do mitzvot? The yetzer to yetzer go together. You can't have one without the other. If there's no temptation to do bad, then doing good is meaningless. The more power there is to do bad is the more ability there is to do good. So they go together, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. Then we have to channel those things which are negative, and it's jealousy, anger, ego. We have to channel them for some positive purpose. There's always something positive because we're human beings. Everybody has their own in B'chol Levavcha, your heart. Everybody's heart is different. Everybody has different desires. Everybody has different challenges. That's harder. So that's whatever he has to work on. Okay. Please God, we'll continue next week. Just let me see if there are any questions here. Is Saturn? Yes, we saw. Going through the motions is not truly yes. On the other hand, going through the motions is sometimes better than nothing. I don't want to say it's meaningless. I don't say saying the words of davening, you know, but we all know how hard davening is. It's really, really hard. All these mitzvahs, they're hard not to be jealous. They're really hard mitzvahs. When things go bad, there's a lesson to learn. Yeah, that's correct. That's what the Gemara says. Here saying to bless God, you're saying more, right? Something positive to come out of the good. Yeah, that's why the Mashiach's born on Tisha B'Av, whatever that means exactly. When you're tempted to do something wrong, but you don't because you love Hashem, that means to love God with all your heart. See, I think when you love God with all your heart, it means you're not tempted to do anything wrong. I think if that's what you're saying, you know, Susan, if I have my heart, it means I have no temptation to do bad.
I was talking about loving Hashem with your Yetzer Hara. Is that
Your Yetzer Hara? Oh, very good. Yes.
You feel like doing something wrong.
I wasn't thinking. Yeah, that's a great meaning. Correct. Where's God with your Yetzer Hara? When I'm tempted to do something wrong, that's my Yetzer Hara. I don't do, that's a beautiful explanation. Correct. Thank you. And you don't because you love Hashem. Yeah. You cannot have free choice without the Yetzer Hara. Correct. Without free choice, you cannot get reborn. That's correct. That's what we're discussing. Rumspringa, I don't know what that means. Oh, Rumspringa. Oh, thank you. The Amish word, right, for living a whole year and experience fully the non-Amish. I didn't know it was a whole year. Well, can you imagine if they did that to kids of your bar mitzvah? So they said, okay, now your bar mitzvah. Now you're going to choose whether you want to be Jewish. So we're going to give you a year to like go eat at McDonald's and do whatever you want, and you'll come back. Wow. So we don't have that in our religion. We only have that for a convert. A convert who was converted before the age of Bar Mitzvah must be given the choice to give up Judaism. We normally wouldn't quite express it that way. We do it in a more subtle way, and where there would go, whatever. But yeah, there, you know what? But there is something to that. There really is something to that. Even within our tradition, I believe, there is something. Let the person have the, we don't want to challenge the HRR because the HRR is going to win, but there is something that we should be Jewish, not because we have to, we want to. We want people to choose to be Jewish. And I think in today's world, there's so many choices. People who do choose, in a sense, are choosing, but it's the, we know they're not always fully choosing. Yeah. Okay. But that's really cool. The aim, by the way, does anybody know, Janine, do you know how many return? How many people actually leave because of this? I wonder if they have a higher rate of retention than we do. No, I mean that in all seriousness. I would very few leave. See, that's very interesting. Often when you give people the choice to leave, they don't leave. One of the reasons, the off the derech, I know they don't like that term, but people grow up observant leaving. A lot of them will tell you they felt because it was rammed down their throat. Had they been given a choice, they may not have left. So it's very interesting. It's mandatory that they can do whatever they want. Cool. Cool. Okay, I have to look more into that, but there is something to be said for that. I'm not recommending you tell your kids they can go eat at McDonald's or can have the choice, whatever. But okay. please, God, when Rabbi Litag will continue on Monday, then we have Rabbi Schumann's last class of Sefer Daniel will be on Tuesday. Then we'll be starting Kohelet 2 weeks later. We have our Rabbi Debo's sexuality in Tanakh and on Tuesday, and then Rabbi Blau continuing a series on Agadah. The final class will be this Wednesday and in terms of this year and this week. And okay, we look forward to learning with you, and any questions, comments, anything you didn't like about what I said, I'm happy to hear. And it's loving God is hard. Loving God with all our heart is even harder. You know, I agree. Loving God with all our heart is, and we'll get there. We'll pick up on that. What it means, but what's the relationship? But anyways, it's not simple. Okay, everybody. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.